I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
We begin with breaking news. Full capacity is coming back. The province has pushed to remove limits at some venues across Ontario, from concerts to movies to meetings, and it starts tomorrow. Good evening. The COVID catch, proof of vaccination, will be mandatory.
And while size won't matter at arenas and theaters, other places like restaurants, retail, and gym will not see their rules change. CTV's Janice Golding is live with the developing details on this. Janice.
Hi, Michelle. A very late afternoon announcement from the province for something that takes effect just after midnight tonight. As vaccination rates continue to increase, the province says it's going to be lifting capacity limits in select settings. The Ministry of Health says with public health and healthcare indicators remaining stable or improving, the government, in consultation with the Chief Medical Officer of Health, is cautiously lifting capacity limits in certain indoor and outdoor settings where proof of vaccination is required. As of 12:01 a.m., 100% capacity will be allowed in concert venues, theaters, and cinemas, spectator areas of sports recreation facilities, meeting and event spaces, horse racing and car racing tracks, film and television productions with audiences, and outdoor settings with capacity below 20,000. The Minister of Health says capacity limits are being increased in places where proof of vaccination requirements are providing an added layer of protection to Ontarians. Christine Elliott went on to call this a gradual and incremental approach, given more than 22 million COVID-19 vaccine doses have now been administered in the province. Here's what people had to say about the plan today.
I'm not sure 100% capacity is the best option at this point. I think we need to take it slow and steady and take a look at the evidence and see what's going on in our communities.
I mean, from the business point of view, it's good for them, but I mean, from the health point, it's very scary. Right, just because I don't, not everyone has been vaccinated.
Well, personally, me, I think that, I won't be going to movie theaters myself, but looking forward to the family get-together for Thanksgiving this weekend and being together with family.
We haven't been back to 100%, at least, not me, so I'm not quite sure. I feel a little bit uneasy about it. If everyone's vaccinated, maybe, but that might cause a problem.
Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment says it is overjoyed by this announcement and that the Leafs' home opener on Wednesday will be performed in front of a full-capacity crowd. Reporting live, I'm Janice Golding. Now back to Michelle and Nathan.
All right, thank you, Janice. And you can find a complete rundown of the new rules on our website, along with reaction to these changes. Our team is tracking it all at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Next to another significant step from the province today, expanding student access to an essential hygiene item in Ontario schools. They're a necessity, not a luxury, and soon menstrual products will be available at no charge.
The result of a partnership between the province and a major pharmacy chain. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Well, Nathan, this announcement is certainly being celebrated across the province today because advocates are hoping it will reduce the stigma around menstruation. And many of them are also hoping that no student will ever have to experience period poverty in Ontario ever again.
For students in Ontario, it's been a missing piece of the education system.
It's a necessity. It's like food and water.
For years on end, advocates have been calling for equitable access to an essential item in schools, menstrual products like pads or tampons. In some communities, the cost is a barrier to access. And some students who menstruate make the difficult choice to skip school, a reality known as period poverty.
Either a number of days of school or substantial amounts of days of their education over their lifetime because they are menstruating and unable to access the sanitation products that they need.
Today, the Ontario government took that step, announcing a partnership with Shoppers Drug Mart to supply every school in the province with menstruation pads for at least the next 3 years.
A total of 18 million menstrual products across the province over the next 3 years, as well as 1,200 dispensers beginning this fall.
Advocates say the dispensers are key to breaking the stigma. Currently, students have access to a patchwork of donated products. In other instances, they're kept in the principal's office, which advocates say can be embarrassing.
And even asking a teacher or asking a principal for these products, that has also been a big barrier. And that's why we've been pushing for these products to be in washrooms, you know, readily available. So young girls and those who mentally don't have to ask a person for these products.
The decision comes months after the government faced pressure to implement a province-wide program. Instead, the partnership will see Shoppers Drug Mart picking up the entire tab.
Should this have been something that the government just pays for? I mean, I actually think it really should be coming out of the government's budget. If we're going to provide soap and toilet paper, we probably need to provide menstrual supplies as well. And we need to make it accessible so that that kid who needs a tampon one day doesn't have to walk down the hall to the office and ask for it.
The government says the program will be reviewed and expanded after 3 years to include tampons and other essential items.
And so beginning this fall, students will be able to access those menstruation products in the school washroom for free. Now advocates say the schools should also be teaching about menstruation, and they want the Ministry of Education to add the subject to the school curriculum. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Back to you.
Thank you, Colin. Chances are you may have spent some time here in the last couple of days, a trip to the grocery store ahead of the Thanksgiving long weekend. And did you notice a big change on your bill at the checkout?
Prices for many items are higher, and that has some shoppers thinking twice about what they're putting in their cart.
So what's behind the food fluctuation? CTV's Scott Lightfoot is live outside the St. Lawrence Market tonight with more. Scott.
Well, Michelle, a busy day here at the market. It just closed moments ago. It's something you probably noticed as you've been grocery shopping over the past few months. Prices seem to be going up, but it's something that really adds up as you're trying to plan for a Thanksgiving dinner.
Ahead of the Thanksgiving weekend, it is a busy Friday at La Boucherie Fine Meats.
Crazy.
But the butcher shop's owner isn't talking about business.
Crazy in the prices. It fluctuates up and down like a stock market.
Turkey is a dollar more a pound this year than last, he says. Just one of a number of foods that will cost a lot more this Thanksgiving.
Beef prices are up on average about 12%. Chicken is up about 12%. Pork is up more than 6 or 7%. Bacon is up 18%. Butter, 35%.
Rising food prices are hard to swallow for many shoppers.
And I know the prices have changed because I do all the grocery shopping. And some of this, for eggs, for example, used to be $2.99. Now they're $3.29.
But retailers say they're also feeling the pinch.
And it's not our fault. The customers always blame us because they think we're gouging them. But we try to do our best to help the consumers out.
In St. Lawrence Market, some small retailers say they've been eating the increase where possible, fearing a loss of market share as the costs of their products go up.
Almost everything to a certain degree. You know, some things 10%, some things 20%. It's almost like the gas price is up. The same idea. The thing is, we don't make any more money. It's more work and less money.
Some shoppers wondering why the cost of groceries keeps going up.
I think it's just the time that we're in. It's a hard time. Everybody's trying to get back to where we were.
Food experts say between the pandemic and supply shortages, there are a number of reasons why things are costing more, including the cost of those who get the food to you.
The agri-food sector is a high-volume, low-margin environment. And so if you are paying more for wages, eventually you have to adjust prices.
Some now making alternate arrangements to ensure they have food on the table for Thanksgiving and beyond.
I just noticed that, you know, I'm hunting more for things that are discounted, you know, and sometimes I'll go to different stores because I know it might be cheaper at those ones.
And those who study food prices had predicted that rising food prices would begin to slow in September or August, but it doesn't seem to be the case. Food price experts had predicted that Canadians, a family of four Canadians, would spend about $700 more this year on groceries than they did last year. That number may actually end up being even higher. Reporting live on Market Street, I'm Scott Lightfoot. Nathan, back to you.
All right, thank you, Scott. Staying with the economy, the battle against COVID-19 may not be over yet, but Canada has regained all the jobs it lost during the pandemic. Stats Canada says 157,000 jobs were added across the country in September, mainly in full-time positions. That smashed expectations and brought total employment back to where it was in February of 2020. The unemployment rate dropped to 6.9%, lower than at any point during the pandemic. Still, analysts say there's more to be done before the recovery is complete. Raw job numbers may be back at February 2020 levels, but the employment rate is still slightly lower because of population growth. There are also 389,000 Canadians considered long-term unemployed for 6 or more months. That's more than double the pre-COVID figure. Stats Canada also says it's watching the impact of mandatory vaccination policies as employers and workers adjust.
Just ahead, her pricey package was stolen from a pickup store. Why the phone theft could be part of a larger trend that could have you thinking twice about what you get delivered.
A Toronto rapper has been arrested south of the border on a murder charge. 22-year-old Hassan Ali, also known as Top 5, was arrested in Los Angeles yesterday. He'll be brought back to Canada to face a first-degree murder charge in the January killing of 20-year-old Hashim Omar Hashi. Police say Hashi was driving into the garage of his apartment near Jane and Falstaff when he was shot multiple times. Investigators haven't shared a potential motive. Elsewhere, there are big developments tonight in a fatal home invasion and abduction case from Hamilton.
An incident that left a father gravely hurt and one of his sons dead. CTV's John Woodward is live with the update. John.
Michelle, one person arrested and charged, but two people still on the run on a crime police say is all about money. Photos seem to show Fakir Ali had connections to Canada's political elite, advertising his success as a businessman. And police say the 63-year-old was targeted in mid-September for money, a violent home invasion. Ali was kidnapped. His two sons were shot. One of them, known as Nano, didn't survive.
Mr. Ali was violently assaulted before he was found near Beach Boulevard. In the city of Hamilton.
Police say it was eagle-eyed neighbors who gave them the clues they needed to track down a vehicle they say is linked to 25-year-old Antoine Chambers.
We had tremendous information from witnesses from Beach Boulevard. We were able to identify the getaway vehicle. Our investigators located that vehicle on the Hamilton Mountain, and from there we were able to ultimately stop Antoine Chambers in that car later that night.
In that car, they found a Stoger STR 9mm handgun like this and charged Chambers with several firearms offenses in September. But it took more digging via a search warrant to get evidence that led to new charges this week. First-degree murder, kidnapping, attempted murder, and aggravated assault. No one answered at Chambers' listed address. Neighbors said police had been there with a warrant days before.
I'm encouraging them to contact a lawyer. Turn themselves in at this point. Our investigation is going to continue to press forward, and we're going to continue our efforts to identify these two involved and hold them accountable as well.
Two suspects are still outstanding. They could face first-degree murder charges too.
These culprits be brought to justice for their inhuman act. We pray for Mr. Ali for a quick recovery and are still saddened by the loss of their son. One loss. Life is one too many.
Friend Zahid Ali said the family was too distraught to talk today. Police say the motive was money, but the perpetrators didn't get what they were looking for. Police say a judgment in a Hamilton court that requires Ali to repay about $11,000 of a loan to a local doctor for home repairs is not a debt connected to this crime. But we did investigate that side of things. It turns out that debt remains unpaid. Reporting live from Hamilton, I'm John Woodward. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, John. In Port Hope, investigators are probing the cause of a double fatal house fire today. Emergency crews were called just before 11:30 for a report of an explosion. They found flames at the back of the home on Brunton Street. Two people were found inside. They were taken to hospital, but they did not survive. A family cat also died.
Just ahead, we all have frustrations when stuck in traffic, but dialing 911 over it is a whole other level. And the reason this driver made the call will leave you just as baffled as the operator who picked up. But first, Michelle Jobin's here with a look at the current conditions as we head into the Thanksgiving long weekend, and the forecast looking pretty good.
The forecast is looking pretty good, Nathan. We do have some showers to contend with for the first day of the long weekend, and that will start in the overnight. But we are still going to be experiencing temperatures that trend way above seasonal, just like they have been today, especially through the overnight. And we also have Humidex factored into this as well. So right now in parts of southwestern Ontario, it's still feeling close to 30 degrees. We do, of course, have a risk of seeing seeing some thunderstorms in those areas, showers through the region as we get through the overnight period tonight. So active weather certainly on the way for the next 24 hours for us, but that should clear out as we get into Sunday, and that's good news. Currently, we're at 18 degrees at the islands, 19 at Pearson, and overnight tonight, a very warm overnight low of 17 degrees with those showers. That's a full 10 degrees above seasonal. I'll tell you more about what you can expect for the weekend coming up. Back to you, Michelle.
Thanks. Well, if you've ever been waiting for any sort of expensive delivery to your home, this is the sort of nightmare situation you dread.
But it turns out the story of one stolen cell phone in Whitby could be the key to unlocking a much larger mystery. CTV's Sean Lethong explains.
On Monday, a notice from UPS was waiting for Stephanie Field on her front door, saying that they had tried to deliver a package, but she wasn't home.
It was a cell phone that was being delivered to me from TELUS.
2 days later, on Wednesday, Field went to pick up her package at a UPS location in Whitby.
They told me that someone with identification, a driver's license that had my name and address on it, but with their picture, had picked up the package.
It had been just hours earlier. In this security footage, you can see a woman at the top right of your screen waiting in line. She's called out of frame by the manager, where she presents a fake ID and receives the phone. Last month, Durham police posted this image on Facebook of a woman who had come to a different UPS location in Whitby and done nearly the same thing, presenting a fake ID and receiving a cell phone.
They looked similar. They were both wearing a mask, so it's very difficult to tell. But the hair was the same and the build was the same.
While the details of both cases are similar, Durham police have not said if they believe this is the same person. While Durham police try and find who is responsible for taking these phones, they're also concerned with how the information got in the hands of the criminals. With two very similar crimes at different UPS locations, police are looking
to see whether or not it is an inside job. Is it information they're receiving from the telephone companies, online purchasing. These are all factors that we're going to be looking into.
For Stephanie Field, who has a new phone on the way, there's also the worry of her identity.
Like, it's a little bit nerve-wracking thinking that there's someone out there with a driver's license with my name on it. And you just don't know what else they can be doing with that.
With a hope that whoever is responsible is found soon. Sean Lethong, CTV News.
Concerns in a Scarborough school about overcrowding amid the pandemic had parents in the streets. They protested at Agent Court Junior Public School today, calling on the school board to keep two junior kindergarten classes separate instead of putting all 26 children into one 900-square-foot classroom.
Last year, with our small classes, we had zero COVID cases. We were able to keep our kids safe last year in those two separate classes, and we should not be combining them this year because nothing's changed for them. They're still unvaccinated, they're still at risk, and they need to be in small class sizes. That's what matters.
My concern is that if there is a case that comes to the school, it's going to spread like wildfire, especially the Delta variant. My concern is that my child will get sick, that my family members will get sick.
Parents also note the school was in a virus hotspot last year. The TDSB says this particular school has a lower number of students per class, and that's why their combining classes is appropriate and meets ministry guidelines.
Public Health Ontario is reporting 573 new cases of COVID-19 in its most recent update. 381 of those cases are among people who either aren't fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 37,000 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and the province's positivity rate is sitting at 1.8%.
621 more cases are now considered resolved, raising that total to more than 576,000 over the course of the pandemic. 10 additional deaths are linked to the virus, meaning 9,786 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
Tonight's regional breakdown includes 104 new cases in the city of Toronto, with 80 in Peel Region. York has 41 new cases, with 29 in Niagara and 20 in Durham. There are 19 new cases in Halton Region, with 15 in Hamilton. Federal health officials are releasing new modeling data, and it's painting an encouraging picture.
We are still in the fourth wave, but cases are starting to level off. CTV's Creason Etchkate reports.
After a tough summer, Canada's top doctor gave some hope today. Modeling shows COVID cases are going down, thanks to public health measures and an uptake in vaccinations.
Nationally, vaccination rates have continued to increase, and we now have above 80% of the eligible population with at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccines in every province and territory.
But the public health agency warns families should be cautious this Thanksgiving long weekend.
Such a gathering should be limited to the immediate household. If let's say, it's a family member is not vaccinated, you should politely explain your situation and your discomfort level.
In Alberta, Saskatchewan, and New Brunswick, the unvaccinated are continuing to have a heavy impact on the healthcare system. In Alberta alone, 87% of the patients in the ICU are unvaccinated.
Lessons have been hard learned where measures were relaxed too much or too soon, and especially where vaccination coverage remains low.
According to the Public Health Agency of Canada, unvaccinated individuals are 10 times more likely to get COVID and 36 times more likely to end up in hospital than people who are fully vaccinated.
Vaccination is still our best defense against this. Things will get better with time, and we will start to see that, I think, in the coming weeks, even in places like Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Northwest Territories.
There are still nearly 6 million Canadians who are not yet fully vaccinated, with the lowest rates among individuals aged 18 to 29. Health Canada is also still deciding on approving the Pfizer vaccine for children between the age of 5 and 11. Dr. Tam says if approved, it could make a big difference in the fight against COVID-19. Chris Anashkate, CTV News, Ottawa.
The TTC is bracing for potential staffing shortages after its COVID-19 vaccine mandate kicks in. A spokesperson says to date, more than 80% of employees and over 75% of unionized employees have shared their vaccination status. Of those, 90% are fully vaccinated. All employees have to meet that requirement by October 30th. The TTC says it won't finalize schedules for after that date as it waits to see how many workers refuse to share proof of vaccination.
There's no point in signing people up for work if after October 30th they are ineligible to work. So that's really what we're doing. We're just advising that we have to plan for all scenarios. We hope and we don't think it's going to be necessary, but we do have to plan for it.
Stuart Green adds the local transit workers union is partially to blame for initially encouraging members not to disclose their vaccination status last month. ATU Local 113 later backed down.
Meanwhile, Toronto's medical officer of health has issued a letter requiring proof of vaccination for anyone 12 and up taking part in indoor sports. While some sports and recreation facilities have already issued their own rules, proof of vaccination or an exemption will now be mandatory. Those rules cover anyone ages 12 and up who's either participating in organized sports, coaching, caregiving, volunteering, or officiating. The new policy takes effect November 1st.
Across the province, more than 86.8% of eligible people have now received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And nearly 82% of eligible people are considered fully vaccinated. That represents nearly 10.7 million people in Ontario.
The RCMP supports COVID-19 vaccination, but the union representing its officers says that should be left up to each individual. The National Police Federation says it will support the decision of each of its members, whatever their choice is. It follows this week's announcement from Ottawa that core public servants must be vaccinated or face suspension without pay. That includes RCMP members and reservists.
They are being honored for their courage in the face of a very dangerous opposition.
Two reporters who fight for freedom of expression are sharing this year's Nobel Peace Prize. CTV's Paul Workman reports.
Maria Ressa has faced multiple criminal charges in the Philippines. Her work and her website have been denounced and vilified at the highest levels. Dmitry Muratov is the editor of Russia's most independent newspaper, under a constant barrage of threats, violence, and even murder. For their bravery, their commitment, sharing the exceptional honor today of the Nobel Peace Prize.
For their efforts to safeguard freedom of expression, which is a precondition for democracy and lasting peace.
I guess what this just shows is that that the Nobel Peace Prize Committee realized that a world without facts means a world without truth and trust.
Ressa turned a crusading eye on Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte and his murderous anti-drug war. The Nobel, she said, is recognition of how hard it is to be a journalist.
I think this just shows you that the battle is worth it. The personal sacrifices are worth it.
Dmitry Muratov has defended freedom of speech in Russia for decades. His newspaper's mission hasn't changed, to investigate corruption and abuse of power. Over the years, six of his journalists have been killed, their work often deeply critical of Russian President Vladimir Putin. Muratov today named them all, as he dedicated his Nobel Prize in their memory. The group Reporters Without Borders praised the Nobel Committee today for its extraordinary tribute, even as it warned that journalism is under urgent threat in many parts of the world. Paul Workman, CTV News, London.
When you gotta go, you gotta go. But that doesn't justify what one motorist did in Peel Region. He called 911 because he was stuck in traffic and nature called.
Okay, yeah, the police, yeah. Where's the emergency?
Actually, the thing is that I have to pee and these guys are not moving.
You have to pee?
Yeah.
This is your emergency that you have to pee?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
How are the police going to help you urinate?
I have to pee, man. And
but I'm not sure what you like me to do that you have to urinate. I can't help you with that. I am disconnecting. Thanks. Bye.
It seems obvious, but Peel police say misusing 911 could prevent someone with a life-threatening emergency from getting help on time.
Still ahead, cannabis delivery and curbside pickup could be here to stay. That's if the Ontario government gets its way.
And I'm Pat Foran. Coming up, it's Feedback Friday. Many viewers with mixed vaccinations are concerned what it could mean for travel plans in the future. Others say they've also had their vehicles damaged at car dealerships. And have you checked to see if your driver's license has expired during the pandemic? Feedback Friday is just ahead.
The long weekend is here, and it's a warm one. As we head into Saturday, showers, a high of 21 degrees, mostly cloudy with a little bit more sunshine later on for Thanksgiving Sunday, and a high of 20 degrees. And then as we get into Monday, it'll be a sun-cloud mix and a warm high of 22. Humidex values creeping near the 30 mark as we get into Monday. Enjoy the increase in sunshine as we get through the weekend. And I'm going to let you know what's happening right through the seven-day forecast coming up in just a little while. The warmth does stay with us. Stay tuned for that.
We had a lot of reaction to our stories on people missing flights due to expired identification and vehicles being damaged at car dealers.
And those with mixed vaccines are hoping to get answers soon on whether they'll be able to travel outside of Canada. Pat Foran joins us with Feedback Friday. Pat.
Thanks, Nathan and Michelle. If you have mixed vaccines, you should have no trouble traveling within Canada. But the answer is not so clear if you want to go to the U.S. or fly abroad. And there is another group of people who say they're twice as concerned about the vaccine they have.
Brenda Moore and her family have booked a cruise for January, but she found out she will not be allowed on the ship because she has mixed-dose vaccines, Pfizer and AstraZeneca. She wants the province to give her another shot of Pfizer so she'll be allowed on the trip.
I'm frustrated. I don't know what to do.
Following our story, we heard from another group also waiting for answers. Robert wrote, I understand those who want to travel with mixed vaccinations, but what about the 250,000 of us double vaccinated with AstraZeneca? What are we supposed to do? Megan Smith dropped off her van at a dealership to have it checked, and when the mechanic took it for a test drive, he got in an accident that caused more than $7,300 damage. Smith was told to take the van elsewhere and go through her own insurance.
They wanted nothing to do with our vehicle, and they wanted nothing to do with us.
Tia told us a dealership totaled my car. I had to pay for a rental, and there was no customer service. I thought I was doing the right thing going to a dealership. Due to the pandemic, the province is not sending out reminder notices if your driver's license or health card has expired. If it has, you can still use it until February of next year, but not to board an airplane. Tracy wrote, our daughter is traveling to BC and planned to use her license's ID. Following your story, she noticed it expired. She got it renewed before the trip. Thanks so much. Now that fall has arrived, squirrels are looking for a place to store food for the winter. A viewer sent in this photo. The car was running rough, and when they popped the hood, they found squirrels had been storing walnuts in the engine compartment. Almost 100 of them had to be removed.
And if your car has been sitting around for a long time, you should always pop the hood to check the engine, especially if you have squirrels around. They just won't store nuts. They can also chew on wires and hoses and cause a lot of damage. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
The Thanksgiving long weekend is here, and there just seems to be this added excitement this year, because when you remember last year at Thanksgiving, people were being advised not to gather. Now, I mean, if you're vaccinated, you can gather safely without masks. I think a lot more people have plans.
Yeah, for sure. The numbers are improving. Things are steady. I think there's a lot more excitement and anticipation for this Thanksgiving, Michelle.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to a small gathering myself. And we're also looking forward to some great weather as we get through the weekend. And I'll let you know what the best day will be coming up. Weather is brought to you by Trane, the most reliable heating and cooling brand. It's hard to stop a Trane. So warmth has been the story really right through this past week. And it continues as we get through the 7 day, not just, of course, with our temperatures. We have humidity as well during the daytime and through the overnight. So this is how we're doing right now. 22 feeling like 28 in Windsor. And, you know, we do have a bit of a thunderstorm risk still in southwestern Ontario. That carries through into the evening and through the overnight. It's 19 right now in the city of Toronto, feeling like 23. We got to a high of 20 degrees at Pearson. We're not going much lower than that as we head through the overnight period. Our low is 17 degrees as we get into the early morning hours. So that's a full 10 degrees, as I mentioned, above where we should be at this time of the year. A little bit more clearing in terms of our sky conditions as we get a little bit further to the north and a little bit cooler in areas like Bancroft over towards Peterborough. Showers moving in through the overnight period for the most part throughout the region. There's that risk of thunderstorms as we get into tomorrow, continuing for southwestern Ontario. So tomorrow is not the best outdoor day of the weekend. We do have warmth, but we also have showers to contend with on and off during the day and some cloud cover. That's going to start to change, though, as we get later on into the weekend. Looking at our radar and satellite imagery right now, just a few spotty showers have been possible, and we saw the slightest droplets here and there earlier this afternoon, but for the most part, it's been a cloud cover situation, more partly cloudy right now in the city of Toronto. More showers over towards the Bruce Peninsula. There's been some activity in the Niagara region, of course, southwest Western Ontario right now. The broader picture looking like this in terms of satellite and radar imagery. And here's how things will play out in terms of our systems. High pressure has been in place for those of us in eastern Ontario. That's sliding off in through southern Quebec. Bit of a surface trough that we're dealing with in the next little while ahead of a frontal system. And that's also helping to kind of bring some more hot, humid air, or warmer humid air, I should say, into the region. So putting our forecast radar in motion, things play out like this. As we get into the overnight, we're going to see a little bit more shower activity or some heavier rainfall down along the shores of Lake Erie up towards the Hamilton region. And that extends into Toronto as we get into tomorrow. So some midday showers, that's also for those of us in, say, Huntsville or Bancroft as well. And then as we get into Sunday, that starts to clear out. We could have some early morning showers on Sunday, but then things are looking much better in terms of our sky condition. And it's going to be a mostly cloudy situation for you on Sunday. Also 20 degrees Monday, Thanksgiving Monday, 22 degrees in a mix of sun and cloud, a little shower activity for Tuesday, but staying warm right through the week. Stay with us. We have lots more coming up to talk about after the break. We'll be back in 2 minutes.
This weekend on W5, the program's taking a look at the sometimes deadly adverse reactions to prescription drugs.
Avery Haynes speaks with David Carmichael, who killed his 11-year-old son in 2004 during a psychotic episode he believes was caused by his antidepressant medication.
When I came out of my psychosis, I cried for 3 days. So the first time I saw Beth, when I was no longer psychotic, was, I don't even understand how this could have happened.
Can you take me to that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think either one of us really knew what to say. I mean, what do you say in a situation like that? I mean, our life was ruined. Ian was gone.
Carmichael is now embarking on a cross-Canada trip to raise awareness of the issue. His family's story is the focus of W5's The Problem with Pills. Avery Haines joins us now with more on her report on the impact of prescription drug side effects on Canadians each year. Avery, you can feel the pain there. I can't even imagine how that family is able to go on. David Carmichael, he was never sentenced to jail time despite killing his own son because he was found to have been in a psychotic depression. He's traveling the country. What's he hoping to accomplish here?
He really ultimately, well, I've got two thoughts on that. One, personally, I think that there's an element of self-punishment. I don't know how you ever deal with the grief and the sorrow at taking your own son's life. So I think that there's an element of self-punishment, of going across the country and telling the story again and again. But he also just wants Canadians to be aware, because this is a huge problem, people not knowing what the potential adverse reactions are for the prescription drugs that they're taking that they think are helping them. And in some cases, you know, it really isn't helping. There is a grossly underreported figure when it comes to adverse reactions. Fewer than 5% of severe adverse reactions are ever reported to Health Canada. So, you know, that's what we rely on to issue the drug recalls, to issue the warnings, is people saying, look, I'm having an adverse reaction. Hospitals or doctors saying, look, there's an adverse reaction. But if we're only getting 5% of them, that means that a lot of people are suffering and a lot of people are not being warned.
What's known as Vanessa's Law was brought in 2014 to help Health Canada collect and compile adverse reactions. But those stats you mentioned make it seem like it just hasn't worked.
You know what, Michelle? What surprised me most in this investigation is that until just recently, Canadian hospitals weren't under any kind of order to pass along adverse reactions that they saw in the hospital. And you would assume that would be the greatest sort of meeting ground for all of the information, right? That's where the biggest pool of people who have adverse reactions would end up. And there was no guidelines and no kind of mandate that those details be passed on to Health Canada. That changed. Vanessa's Law brought that in 2014. It took 5 long years for that to take effect. But in 2019, that has now been ordered by Health Canada that hospitals have to pass that along. But even still, Health Canada says that there is underreporting of mandatory surveillance systems. So it's a real problem. And I think that the most important things for Canadians to know, if they are on any prescription now, if they haven't read that little sheet that you get with the pharmacy, or if their doctor hasn't spoken to them, I came across a really important website. It's called, and I'm going to give it to you twice just so you have it, if you're on a prescription drug, it's called rxisk.org. And if you go on that website, Michelle, you can put your medication in and you can see what the adverse reactions can be. So you can be aware of it. And that's rxisk.org.
When we tune in tomorrow, what do you think we're going to learn? Because it does seem that a lot of people, they take prescription drugs without fully being aware of possible side effects, because it's a lot to read and you trust that your doctors are prescribing something that's going to be good for you.
We spoke to a doctor who's an expert in drug policy, and he says we have too much trust in our doctors, and doctors have too much trust in Health Canada. Do you know that Health Canada spends 3 times as much money on approving new drugs than it does on monitoring the safety of drugs that are already on the market? And the bulk of the potential side effects that we learn about, it comes from the drug makers in their clinical trial. So the key missing factor in all of this is people's experience. And, you know, if you have a serious adverse reaction, there's a place on the Health Canada website where you can go in and report it yourself. These are really important things to warn others. And I think that in David's Cross Canada tour, he just hopes if one family is aware of the possible side effects of any prescription drug, because they all come with side effects, that Canadians you know, really need to know about that. And if he can prevent any tragedy like his, he's done something good out of such a terrible situation.
It sounds like this report's going to do a lot of good as well. Thank you, Avery. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Michelle.
And to watch the full report, tune into W5. It's called The Problem with Pills. It airs right here on CTV tomorrow night at 7, after CTV News at 6.
But he's not busy topping the charts. Toronto's own The Weeknd will now be taking on a new humanitarian role. The singer, who's the son of Ethiopian immigrants, has been named a Goodwill Ambassador for the United Nations World Food Program. The Weeknd says he feels passionate about addressing world hunger, and the new partnership will help further efforts to end suffering and help people in need.
After sharing a sneak peek yesterday, Justin Bieber is out with a music video for his song Ghost that might tug at your heartstrings. I can't be close to you. I settle for the ghost of you. Bieber touches on the pain of losing a loved one, portrayed as his grandfather. His grandmother is played by Diane Keaton. The video shows Bieber as he tries to cheer her up on a night out on the town while singing he still misses the song's subject, More Than Life.
The newest James Bond film is now in theaters across North America, and it's already breaking records.
Name?
Bond. James Bond.
Deadline reports No Time to Die brought in nearly $8 million across North America in Thursday night previews. That's the best performance ever for a Bond film in previews. The movie's release was pushed back several times because of the pandemic. It's Daniel Craig's final turn as James Bond.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Last Man's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
I mean, from the business point of view, it's good for them. But I mean, from the health point, it's very scary.
Updating our top stories, Ontario is lifting capacity limits in select settings starting tomorrow. They include concert venues, theaters, and spectator areas of sports facilities. Proof of vaccination will still be required.
A total of 18 million menstrual products across the province over the next 3 years, as well as 1,200 dispensers beginning this fall.
The province announced today that menstrual products will be provided free of charge to students in every school. Shoppers Drug Mart will pick up the tab.
Prices are up on average about 12%. Chicken is up about 12%. Pork is up more than 6 or 7%.
Food prices are definitely up. There are many reasons, including the pandemic and supply shortages. Labor shortages are also forcing employers to pay staff more, and that means higher prices for the customer.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar was up 46 basis points to 80.18 U.S. American benchmark oil gained $1.05 a barrel to close at 79.35. And the TSX Composite Index was steady at 20,416. Google's updated its advertising rules as part of an effort to address climate change. Going forward, the tech giant will prohibit ads that claim climate change is not real, and it will not monetize content that contradicts the scientific consensus on global warming. The policy will also apply to YouTube videos. Google says publishers have grown increasingly uneasy about climate denial ads appearing next to their content, and advertisers don't want their products associated with misinformation either.
A temporary change to Ontario's cannabis laws put in place because of the pandemic could be here to stay. When COVID-19 first hit, private cannabis stores were given the option of offering delivery and curbside pickup. At Queen's Park this week, the government put forward a bill that would make the ease rules permanent. Retailers have welcomed the move, which the province says will support physical distancing and other health measures. The newest job numbers are out, and the economy has reached levels not seen since before the pandemic.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Christina Tenaglia and Jamie Goodfreund. Jamie, you're getting reaction to the numbers.
Yeah, well, it's a very mixed reaction in terms of what to do with the benefits, because right now we're seeing these unemployment rates not yet seen since pre-pandemic. So the big question is, Nathan, does the government put an end to these government benefits, or do they extend it, which some people say could actually impact the economic recovery? We've got a panel to break that down. That's coming up on CP24 tonight.
Also interesting, Christina, students at a high school walked out of class today after a dress code was issued days after a sex assault investigation was launched at the school.
Yes, you can understand how upsetting this is for students in terms of the messaging. This is Waterdown District High School in Waterdown. There were allegations of a sex assault associated with the school several days ago. Then comes an announcement from the principal reminding students, and again, particularly the young women in the school, not to show your shoulders or your stomachs. The timing of this announcement, of course, very poorly timed. And the young women and the young men at the school, as you can understand, frustrated, as it appeared that the dress code message had been conflated with this sexual assault, sexual harassment allegation. It is victim blaming. It is, well, frankly, inappropriate. It sends the wrong message. So students are speaking out. There was a protest today. We're going to speak to one of the young women behind the protests coming up.
All right. Thank you both. And don't forget, CP24 Tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9. After the break, they're fluffy, adorable, and now they have names. Find out what hundreds of thousands of fans voted to call these panda cubs.
Coming up this Saturday on Things to Know TO, Cabs Realty on property investment in the GTA and Central Florida. Pathways to Education helps students build their future starting with high school graduation. Holland Bloorview creates a world of possibilities for kids and youth with disabilities. And Sky's the Limit, providing laptops to youth who need them. All this Saturday morning on Things to Know TO.
I'm Pauline Chan. Coming up, Ontario is opening up. Find out which places will be moving to 100% capacity as early as tomorrow. And why celebrating Thanksgiving will cost more this year. Toronto's number one news tonight at 11:30.
Whale watchers off the coast of Washington State can't believe their eyes. This is the first beluga whale seen in Puget Sound in about 80 years. Experts say it's very rare to see one of these gentle giants so far from home. They usually live off the coast of Alaska and throughout the Arctic, more than 1,600 kilometers away. But this adult has been spotted here at least three times this week.
And how about this? In Tokyo, giant panda twins born in June finally got their names. Lele for the female cub and Chiao Chiao for her brother. More than 190,000 people across Japan submitted their suggestions. The cubs both weigh about 6 kilograms, nearly 50 times their weight at birth. And their public debut is expected in January when they turn 6 months old.
Suddenly, I feel like going to the zoo this weekend, Michelle.
You know, it's pretty good weather for it, actually, as well, Nathan. We will have some showers to deal with as we get through tonight and in through the day tomorrow, overcast. But we're still on the warmer side. The sun will show itself, though. It'll come out as we get into Sunday, starting out in a mostly cloudy situation. Slight risk of some early morning showers, a high of 20 degrees for Thanksgiving Sunday. And then we'll see some clearing later on. Thanksgiving Monday, 22 degrees and a mix of sun and clouds. Some showers as we head back into the week on Tuesday, but some sunshine as well. And these warm temperatures stay with us right through the 7 day. Back to you, Michelle.
Thank you. And be sure to join Pauline Chan later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 Tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.
Good night.